We continue our morning session. My pleasure to introduce Lenka Kutsarova from University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and the Bulgarian Academy of Sciences. And since she's doing a Blackboard talk, I have to look up the title. It's Transportation Cost Spaces on Finite Metric Spaces. Please.
Thank you very much. First, I would like to thank the organizers for the possibility to come here and see Cambridge for the first time, and also to have these excellent conditions to work with long-time co-authors, meet new people, and start joint projects with them. So thank you very much. What I'm going to talk today is a joint work with Steven Dilworth and Mikhail Ostrovsky. And Steve Dilworth is actually here. He also is a participant in the conference. And this is about, well, the title of the paper is Lipschitz Free Spaces on Finite Metric Spaces. But for this talk, we're using an equivalent name for that, and I'll mention later several names under which the same object is known. So, transportation cost. Well, we'll start with the definition of, we have a metric space, M, with distance d, so metric space and let's have a function here. So consider an arbitrary function f which goes from m to the real line. Also, it has finite support. Its mean is zero. So one can interpret this function actually as a transportation problem. And let's say you have your points here, right? Here, let's say it's v1, here is v2. And suppose that f of v1 is positive. Well, you can think of it that there is some particular product, which is you have f of v1 units at the point v1. And if, let's say, f of v2 is negative, then you can interpret it as the absolute value of this, units which are needed of that product. And so, what is now a transportation plan? And one can show easily that for every function of this type, you can find a transportation plan, which will be the following. This is a representation of the function f as sum over some i's. Here, non-negative coefficients ai. And here, the indicator function of point xi minus the indicator function of point of, well, this is of just singleton sets, right? Like this. And why is the transportation plan? Well, because you can actually, this corresponds to you're transferring a1 units of your product from point xi to point yi. And of course, these points don't have to be distinct. Some of them could coincide. So after you have a transportation plan, and as I said, for every function, you can have a transportation plan. Now, what would be the cost of this plan? Well, the cost will be, you take of this plan, you take here summation over I, and here you have ai's, and then, well, you have ai units. The reasonable thing is to multiply by the distance between these two places. So this is the cost. And when you take the minimal possible cost over all such representation, you get the transportation cost norm. Minimal cost over all representations. And And then, well, now we have several functions. I mean, have many functions of this type. We have the norm defined. Now we can define the transportation cost space. The transportation cost space is the completion. It's the completion of all these functions of this type f with respect to this norm. Completion. This norm. And since here we'll be working with finite metric spaces, well, it's already complete. But one can consider it also for infinite spaces. Now, after giving you the definition, one possible definition, I have to tell you several names under which these objects and this type of norm are known. So they are, well, the norm itself is known under the names Kantorovich-Rubinstein distance or Wasserstein distance. In computer science, they call it transportation cost or Earth moving distance. And apparently, this norm is used as a way to measure the distance between different pictures in graphics and vision. Well, don't ask me how exactly. I saw it in a paper written, but apparently that is so. And then the spaces themselves are also known either the names of Ahrens-Eales spaces or Lipschitz-free spaces. Well, the last one, Lipschitz-free spaces, were used mainly from people in Banach space theory, where I come from. And the term was coined by Gilles Gottois and Nigel Calton. So, now since I mentioned the last name was Lipschitz-free spaces, I want to write down the connection of transportation cost spaces with Lipschitz functions. So now, when we have our metric M, just fix one point and make it a distinguished point. Fix point O in your space M. And then consider, well, let's say by Lipschitz, let's say 0 of M, this will be the set of all Lipschitz functions, all Lipschitz functions, f from M to, well, maybe I shouldn't have used the same letter F, but doesn't matter, to R. And why do we need this point? Well, it will send this point always to 0. So after you have that, you have a nice characterization of the dual space of the transportation cost space. So then we have, as a fact, we have that the dual of the transportation cost space of M is exactly that one. Well, and this is a Banach space when you equip each function f with as its norm to be the Lipschitz constant of that function. So this turns out to be exactly this space of Lipschitz functions. And most of the articles which were in Banach spaces use this duality. They work quite a lot through the dual. And here I'm going to quote first a paper by Tsuf, Doha, and Vojtaszek. Yes, I spelled it correctly. So, Tsut, Doha, and Wojtaszczyk. Well, if you speak a little bit of Polish, it helps. That is sz, that is cz, so Wojtaszczyk. And so they proved the following result. So let us have that M is infinite. Let M be infinite. Then the transportation cost space of M, of course they use the name Lipschitz free space of M, contains a complemented subspace isomorphic to little L1. So no matter what your transportation cost space, if your metric space is infinite, it has infinitely many points, then it contains a big little L1 space. Maybe I should recall what it means for a subspace to be complemented. So let's say you have two Banach spaces, Y and X, and let's say Y is a subspace of X. We say that Y is complemented in X if there exists a bounded linear projection. Bounded linear projection, which goes from P, from X onto Y. And if you consider all such possible projections, the infimum of their norms is called the projection constant of the projection constant for Y into in X. So the projection constant is the minimal. And now, well, the isomorphisms. So let's have two Banach spaces, X and Y. They are isomorphic if there exists, well, an isomorphism, I'm going to say what it is. If there exists some T which goes from X onto Y such that it is linear, bounded, invertible. So T inverse exists, and T inverse is also linear bounded. And then when you take here, when you take this product, let's say the product, the norm of T and the norm of T inverse, this gives you the measure of how far they are from each other. So the, if you take the infimum over such isomorphisms, that will give you exactly the constant of this isomorphism. I also have to point out here that, so here you have that it's isomorphic, right? So they're like that, and it's complemented. When you consider, let's say, finite dimensional spaces of given dimension, non-linear spaces of finite dimension. Well, as we all know, they're isomorphic to each other. But you still want to know how far they are from each other. So there is the so-called Banach-Mazur distance between these spaces. And usually it is given its multiplicative form rather than taking the logarithm. So if you have that this is, that let's say X and Y are finite dimensional and of the same dimension, this will be there exactly, their Banach-Mazur distance X, Y, if the dimension of X is equal to the dimension of Y and it's finite. So, after giving you these definitions, I want to present our first result in the paper. And this is, this is a finite version of the result of Tsut, Doha, and Wojtaszczyk. So, we show the following. So, this is our first result. Theorem. that we consider finite spaces. So for every n point metric space M, the transportation cost over M contains a two isomorphic, so here in that infimum we have two isomorphic, two complemented, so the projection constant is two complemented, a copy of little l1 k, where k is basically half of the dimension of this space. So this is, you take half of the points, the integer part. And how do we do that? Well, one of the lemmas is a finite version of a lemma of Doha and Wojtaszczyk. But then we interpret the metric space as a complete graph, complete weighted graph. So you put all the possible, I'm not going to draw all of them, of course, and so on, so all of the edges. And then the length of each edge will be the distance between these two points coming from the metric space. And for weighted graphs, well, we had to use also this duality which we have here. So, but later for unweighted graphs, we'll have another way of working directly with the transportation cost space. So here, we, after considering this weighted graph, we use some special type of spanning trees. A spanning tree for a graph, it is a tree which contains all the vertices of the graph and has the minimal amount of edges. So special type of here with minimal weight, so to speak. And when we combine it with the lemma, which is a finite version of theirs, we get this result. But for some type of graphs, we can say something even better. We can say that this is just isometric, and here one complemented, the best possible. And this is what I drew here. These are, well, the upper part, these are the so-called diamond graphs. So how do you start? I'll later use this iterative procedure, which was first considered by Lee Raghavendra for constructing iteratively graphs. So you start with the segment. When you have one point is the top, the other one is the bottom, and then you replace it. This is your main elementary graph. So this is the first diamond, so D1. And then here the edge will be 1. In computer science, sometimes they want to keep the whole here, the distance to be 1, and they make them smaller, but here we'll be just keeping them again 1, 1. Well, it's, the proportion is not correct, but I wanted not to use too much space. And then the next step will be, well, you have the diamond, now each of these edges replace with the diamond, and so this is the second diamond, and so on. You can have Dn. So these diamonds were considered in Banach space theory for characterizing spaces which do not admit equivalent uniformly convex norm, or equivalently do not admit an equivalently uniformly smooth norm. In Banach spaces, we call them also this class of spaces not superreflexive. And you can characterize them in a nonlinear way by actually embedding, by Lipschitzly, embedding diamonds uniformly of arbitrary length. And the first result of this type was an old result due to Jean Bourguin, who characterized the same class by not having trees, not having dyadic trees. So if the space is not super reflective, then you can embed in it in a by Lipschitz way dyadic trees of arbitrary length. So here, for the diamonds, we have the following theorem. That the transportation co-space over the diamond graph. Oh, and when you consider a graph, the metric is the so-called graph metric. So you take any two vertices and take all the possible paths through the edges which connects them, and the minimal length is your distance, graph distance. So here the transportation cost over the diamond actually contains one complemented isometric copy of little one k, where k is exactly half of the dimension. Well, 4 to the power n, that's the dimension of the nth iteration of the diamond. And now I want to give you another characterization, yet another characterization for the transportation cost. And this is the main one which we used. And this is for unweighted graphs, like the diamonds. So let G be a graph with the set of vertices, set of edges, and it's unweighted, which means all its edges are length, let's say, 1. And we also want it to be oriented, meaning take each edge and in some way just orient it. Then we consider the space little L1 over the set of edges. So this is a finite, well, this is some little L1 M, where M is the number of edges, right? And then consider all possible cycles in the space. Consider cycles. Let's say for any, let C be a cycle, I'm going to define here, define a signed indicator, signed indicator function of this cycle. And this will be, so the characteristic function of the cycle, and I have to tell you what it is. This is actually, this belongs, this function belongs to this little L1 of E. So the sign indicator function will be, well, if your edge E belongs to the cycle, and let's say for the cycles also take some orientation, so let's take just the clockwise, right? Which is, I mean, that's easy, or counterclockwise. So if we take this, we look at the direction of that same edge in the cycle, in the graph and in the cycle. If they have same orientation, you write plus one. If it belongs to the cycle, but here it's opposite, write negative one. And if it does not belong to the cycle, write zero. Then take the cycle space of the graph, cycle space, which of course is a subspace of little L1 over the edges. If this is the subspace spanned by the indicator, signed indicator functions of all, let's say, signed indicator functions of all cycles. And now, the beautiful part. We have the following fact. What is the transportation cost space over the graph? So, this is our metric space. Well, it's a quotient. You take little l1 over the edges, and you take the quotient with the cycle space. And isometrically, it's exactly the same. So from now on, we'll use only that characterization. And here, I drew a picture for you, let's say, just for the diamonds. Here, the cycle space, I took the orientation for the graph just to be from bottom up, from down up. So for all these edges, so I didn't draw it. And then, let's say, the clockwise orientation for all cycles. A basis, the cycle space in this particular case for D2 has dimension 5. So each of these finest cycles, well, four of them, and take just one of the big ones. All the other cycles will be a linear combination of those indicator functions, and I drew them here. Of course, it is a discrete case. I mean, you have little L1 of, so the whole space is little L1 16, and here you have a subspace which is of dimension 5. But it's, you know, nicer for the eyes to interpret it continuously in capital L1. So I'll take the interval from 0 to 1. Here I have 16 edges for this one, so I have 16 intervals of the same length. And what are the indicator functions of the small ones? Well, for these two here, I have clockwise, so the direction coincides with that. So here the yellow part, here and here. For all of them, this dot is the second one, the third, the fourth one. And then the indicator functions, signed indicator function for, let's say, this big cycle is, I don't know, banana color or sunset color. So here is this one here and that one, so that's the whole function. And if you notice, for the finest cycles, it's actually, well, they are Haar functions, right? That's exactly what they are, Haar functions. Of course, the big cycle, well, it's not the Haar function, but we'll see later what's going on here. To prove this theorem, rather than deriving it, I mean, the second one, which was, well, the second theorem for the just for the diamonds, well, we derived it directly from the first paper with a little bit of work, but this could this fact could be derived also from just using the monotonicity of the Haar functions, and that will give you the result. And I have to say that when we worked on this project, we always first worked with the diamonds and the Haar functions and so on, and we checked their first our proofs and our conjectures, what's going on, and then we later generalized. So now, from now on, I'm going to speak only about unweighted graphs, and, well, I have to erase maybe something. And I will use only this characterization. So we are going to work with some more general case of iteration graphs, which contain the diamonds, also contain this called Lakso graphs. In computer science, Lakso graph. But this is in the way as defined by Lunk and Plaut. Although they look very similar for computer science, they're different because this is not doubling. So you don't increase the amount of edges coming of a point when you go further iterations. And for this one, you do. So now we'll use the same thing. We take first one segment, then you take some graph, whatever it is, but it has, let's say, top and bottom point, something. And then, so this will be my B, which I'll also denote by B1. Then the same thing for the diamonds, replace this segment by this graph, but again, I'm going to keep all my edges to be 1, so this will be B1, then take for the next one will be B2, replace each of these edges will be with that B, and so on, so all this is like that, and then you get Bn. So we have here iteration of graphs. So our main result, the main result in the paper is the following. Theorem. So if we take, if our directed graph B satisfies some technical conditions, star, then we have the following, that the Banach-Mazur distance between the transportation cost space over Bn and L1 of the same dimension as the space, let's say Dn, is greater than or equal to a constant, which depends on the first graph B, and here n over logarithm of n. The most essential among these conditions which we impose on the graph are that it has a lot of symmetries. So kind of like you can see for Lakso graphs, for the diamond graphs, you have a lot of horizontal and also vertical symmetries. And the logarithm, well, we don't know if it's optimal, if that is the order actually, because the logarithm comes from the proof. I mean, we need the supports of some vectors to be almost disjoint. We iterate, and then, well, we love logarithm. But that's, I saw this trick is also used even in greedy bases when you, I mean, how many steps you need that, and very often by the proof you lose a logarithm. So, in order to show this result, from a result of Banach space theory, in order to get this lower bound, it is enough to show the projection constant of the cycle space, the projection constant of the cycle space in the whole space. So it is basically how well you can complement it inside. And this is how we deal with it. And we use a method, averaging method, of Grunbaum Rudin, and then Andrew used also that result. And so we have of averaging projection, we consider bijections in between the edges. So we have bijection which sends edge to an edge, and with the special property that they're cycle preserving. So cycle goes to cycle. And since our graphs have a lot of symmetries, actually it is nice to work with them. So let me just, I'm not going to write the formula, so we have some projection which is invariant with the respect of the group of isometries which are generated by these bijections. And if you take any projection P, then you produce this by a formula, averaging formula, and we have that. So to study the how well our subspace is complemented, we just need to focus on these ones. And for some cases, these invariant projections, they are very nice. They're unique. For the diamonds, they are unique. For the Lakso graphs, they're not unique. So it varies. And for the diamonds, we have something better. For the diamonds, we have, rather than having logarithm for the diamonds, we have that the Banach-Mazur distance for, let's say, the transportation cost over the diamonds, and L1 of the same dimension as this one, we have upper and lower bound, and it has order n.
Is it logarithm of dimension, whole dimension?
Pardon?
The dimension of this space.
You see, the diamond graph with at n, it's 4 to the power n.
Yeah,
so.
Logarithm.
Yes, it is logarithm, yes. And now I want to say something more about the diamonds. And this is which was our aha moment for Steve and me. Because, let's say, consider the Haar functions. Consider the Haar functions on 0, 1, in capital 1, the space. And Andrew, consider, let's say, if HK is level of Haars, which have the same support of length of support to be exactly 2 to the power minus k. So if you consider that, and let's say consider all the possible level of Haars up to some point, let's say up to h0, h1, and so on, up to the level h2n minus 1, and then he took only the, let's say, either the even or the odd levels. So here I'll take only h0, h2, and so on, h2n minus 2. And he showed that this subspace into, because this is a subspace of that, he showed that this is not well complemented. When n goes to infinity, the constant goes to infinity. And this is exactly what we needed, because we had the following lemma. Well, I maybe have to erase somewhere, or I can write here. We have the lemma that for the diamond graphs, the cycle space of the graph is exactly spanned by all even levels. So it's exactly the situation which Andrew considered. But what was the amusing thing for Steve and me was that we have seen this picture before, when we have the even levels of the Haar functions. And it was related to something completely different mathematically, more precisely to a quasi-greedy basis. So I have to say just a few words here to give you some of the definitions for that. The quasi-greedy bases are a generalization of the important class of unconditional bases. They were introduced by Konyagin and Temlyakov. And let's have that En is a Schauder basis for a Banach space X. Let's say, suppose that some element x can be expanded as summation here over n, an, en, that's the expression with respect to the basis. And the two equivalent definitions for a basis to be quasi-greedy. The original definition of Konyagin and Temlyakov is the following. Well, let's consider a greedy rearrangement of the coefficients. So let's say A row 1 is greater than or equal to A row 2, and so on. Some could be equal, but that really doesn't affect anything in this context. The greedy approximant of order m of x would be what? You just take the sum. This is the sum I from 1 to m of A row I, E row I. And so there exists a constant such that for every m, every x, in the space, you have that the norm, the this is less than or equal to C, the norm of X. This is the original definition, and then Wojtaszczyk gave an equivalent definition. So this is a basis is quasi-greedy if and only if you have that the rearrangement converges. So A of rho I E rho I converges, and of course it goes again to X. So for quasi-greedy basis, the situation was the following. It was for the space capital L1. The Haar basis is not quasi-greedy. However, Sambat Gugyan showed that if you consider exactly the subsequence of the Haars, which is all the Haars from, let's say, the even levels, or the odd levels as a matter of fact, this sequence is quasi-greedy. So here is a very important question, which turns out that first it was asked by Gidon Shechman, regardless of quasi-greedy basis, just on its own. What is the subspace in capital L1 generated just by all the Haars from the even levels? And this is an open question. It might be very hard. So it's an open question. And here what we have is exactly the same finite version of that question. So for what is the cycle space in the transportation co-spaces? What is it, the cycle space of, let's say, the diamond graphs? Is it isomorphic uniformly to little L1 of the same dimension? Well, not known. And then there are also some other questions, let's say, related to the transportation cost for the graphs. It is Misha Ostrowski told us that computer scientists care about the co-type of the transportation cost space. And let's say in equivalent formulation of Moret-Pizier, a space has a trivial co-type if and only if you can embed uniformly L infinity n's. So what is the co-type here? We don't know, for even for the diamonds. The only result we know of in this direction belongs to Jean Bourguin, and he showed that for a Hamming cube. For the Hamming cube, the transportation co-space has trivial co-type. Well, he didn't construct L infinity n's in the space itself. He did it through the dual. So he used harmonic analysis, and he constructed little L infinity n's uniformly in the dual, and then, well, they caused L infinity n's in the space itself. Finally, I want to say that since in the beginning I mentioned this, that for computer science they care about Earth moving distance, transportation cost, distance in order to measure distances between pictures, it's natural to consider what about a grid of points, because that will correspond to a picture. There is one paper of Asaf Naor and Gidon Shechman, which treats that. It gives some asymptotic behavior for that. Here, while Steve and I were in the institute here, we tried to see if our method can give something about the grids, and maybe use some symmetries and so on, and just apply the same method which we used here. So we got something. Well, it's not complete, and we don't know if we can reach the end goal. But what we managed to find out is what kind of invariant projections we have. So the invariant projections, we found the basis for the invariant projections, and we ran MAPLE, oh my god, for me, the first time touching a computer for checking something, you know, to see some hypothesis. Well, very often the computer said, no, 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 your conjectures are false. So we managed to find this general form, and then we ran with MAPLE, and we saw what? let's say for up to 6x6 grid, we saw what the projection is, the minimal projection and so on. So hopefully, even if we cannot get the result, if you have a powerful enough computer, you know the form of these projections. Well, you run the program, you optimize it, and you find the projection constant, which can tell you a lot about it. So this is what I wanted to say. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Denka. Are there any questions?
It's a basic question. So if you replace the transportation cost with the Wasatch Time P norm?
Okay. This corresponds to Wasatch Time 1 norm.
Right.
This one. Yes. With the P, we haven't thought about that, but...
In particular, that fact that I thought maybe generalizes
well. Oh yes, that is possible. We haven't looked at that. I mean, I have to say that Steve and I are very new to this topic, because this is actually our first result in this, and this was Misha Ostrowski, who works in New York. He recruited us. And he said, oh, let's work on Lipschitz free. And I said, nah, I don't know anything about that. He said, oh, but wait. And then he started explaining me exactly of this characterization here. And I said, hard functions, other things, and so on. Ah, OK. So we're really happy that we work with him.
Okay.
Yes.
So just to make sure, these graphs are planar graphs only.
Yes. Yes, here are planar
so
graphs.
So do you have something for something else, like a Möbius strip?
Towards the end of our considerations with Steve, we started looking at three-dimensional grids. And it was a mess.
So far... A Möbius strip, nothing complicated.
Well, I mean, you have to have a good basis for the cycle space. And even for the regular grid, well, it took us some time. But for the three-dimensional, well, any hypothesis we made, the damn maple showed it wrong. And so until finally, we more or less saw what's going on. So.
Other question? Very soon, yes.
Do you think your first theorem has some practical value? Or do you try to sell something with this problem?
I know. The very first time I spoke in a seminar of Kashin in Moscow, he said, what is this? You're working with non-separable Banach spaces, finite spaces. These are the useful ones. Separable, they're okay. They're needed. But unseparable, non-separable spaces, they're not applied in the country's economy. So, well, I mean, if you work with the grid, at least, it should have some applications. Because, I mean, computer scientists care a lot about that. And exactly in relation to, I think, practical things, they need the co-type. So.
Any other questions?
Denka, do you know why they care about the co-type? It's a pretty esoteric
one. Well, I don't know. I'm sorry that Misha Ostrowski is not here, because he's a good encyclopedia for all of these questions. But I can tell you why I care. Well, because these are beautiful and hard mathematical problems. And let's say I even asked one famous mathematician for this problem, when you take only the even hars. And he replied in a week, your problem, it's hard, but it's nice. I'm not going to tell you who that person was.
All right. If there are no more questions, let's thank Denka again.